my God.
Hey, what's going on, guys? Greg here, and you are tuned into our Artist Spotlight series. I'm sitting here for the first time ever in this studio with a Grammy-nominated artist, Darnell Miller. How you doing, man?
Man, all is good. I'm happy to be here. I'm happy to be an artist for a day. It's been a busy couple months and weeks for me, but today I just get to be an artist. I'm like super duper happy.
I love that, man. And what do you mean by that? Like, I get to be an artist. Tell me what you mean.
Well, you know, like, so much other things going on right now in my life, you know, organizing and spreadsheets and all that kind of stuff that I haven't had time to like really think about music or think about anything like that. I haven't done gigs since maybe late August because I wanted to take a break. Mm-hmm. And now, like, you know, I'm ready to gig, I'm ready to do interviews, I'm ready to do all that again. So this is the first step in, like, wanting to be an artist again.
I feel special to be the first step.
Yeah, you are the first step.
And I can imagine it probably feels like there's almost like a piece missing when you're not doing, you know, your gigs and you're like being an artist. That's what you became over these past couple years.
It's like being out in the hot sun all day and then you walk into a building that has the most amazing air conditioning system. It's like,
That sounds refreshing.
Exactly.
That sounds refreshing right there, man. Well, you know, I want to start this out. Obviously, you're pretty well known around our area here. Mm-hmm. And I love this because I was doing my research before we got in here. And I go on Reverb Nation and they describe your music as super funky gospel rock soul. What do you think about that? You think that's accurate? You think that's spot on?
That might be it. I love funk. You know, I'm a funk fool. I mean, I created a side project just for the funk.
Uh-huh.
It's definitely rock because I grew up, you know, on a lot of hair metal and mm-hmm. death metal and thrash.
Hair metal.
You know, and then it's gospel because no matter what I'm talking about, you're going to feel the Holy Ghost.
Yeah. I love that, man.
You know what I mean?
You talk about like the gospel music and your upbringing, right? I mean, that's where mm-hmm. we started. That's how you started playing music.
Mm-hmm.
Is it unconscious now coming out when you're writing your music? You're always going to have that influence?
I think anyone should have a good spiritual foundation. And I think like just me having the foundation that I had, it's always going to come out. And I'm actually glad because I think it adds to what I write about. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes sense. Yeah.
You know, it makes me want to like dig a little deeper. Even if I'm talking about like relationships, it makes me want to dig a little bit deeper.
Yeah.
Because sometimes I view things from a spiritual lens, whether it be you broke up with me, I hate you. You know, I still kind of view it from a spiritual lens.
And for people who may not have grown up with that spiritual lens, they may not have seen the music that comes through with the gospel music and the mm-hmm. Christian music and the stuff you guys do in mm-hmm. church. Kind of give us a snapshot of what it's like to grow up in that and how you started playing music in church.
Well, I can only give it from my perspective. So if you don't know by listening to me, I am an African-American male. But I grew up in a very multicultural church that was focused on the arts. I grew up looking at concerts and I grew up doing Broadway style Easter shows, choreography, costume changes, 3 nights a week. You know, I grew up in a church that was very progressive when it comes to the arts and music and that kind of thing. So I think that it was a good training ground for me because right away, music was the thing that I adapted to. That was a place where I could just kind of figure out what I wanted. I did everything from singing the kids' choir to play the drums, mm-hmm. to direct the choir, one of the special singers. At one time, I was the only young person that sang with the special singers. I was a kid directing the adult choir. I mean, I did everything. Played guitar in the church, worked the cameras. When we had, you know, mm-hmm. TV shows, I would work the cameras. I mean, I did so much stuff. But it was a good...
You're multi-talented,
like,
man.
In the church. It was just a great training ground. I learned how to present myself on TV, like when I'm singing. I learned about camera angles. I learned the discipline and practice that it takes to put on like a production, not just get up in front of an audience and sing, but put on a production, costume changes and lighting. Because as a kid, you're watching all this come into play.
Mm-hmm.
You know, dress rehearsals and everything. I also learned how to put together a set. Like if you're doing a show, you ask anybody, I can put a set together and that joint would be like amazing. But I learned all that stuff in church because of the kind of church I went to. And then I got to see some really cool concerts, like those that are into like Christian music. You know, I got to see people like Amy Grant, who I love, bands like Stryper, who I adore. They're one of my favorites still to this day, like Toby Mac, DC, to so many amazing Christian artists that are now legends. I got to see them and sometimes sit with them.
Probably crazy for you because there was probably a point in your life when you were young.
Mm-hmm.
where you were like, oh, it all just happens. And then you're starting to learn how it all happens.
Yeah.
Do you remember, this is a tough question, do you remember the point in your life where you're like, man, I think this is going to be my life here. Music is probably going to be my future. You remember a point in your life where you're like, that clicked?
Honestly, I don't know. I think I've never been asked this question. You know what? I don't know. I think I just always wanted to do it. I was always making up songs. I always had the music blasting in my bedroom and singing loud and teaching myself how to sing harmony. I just always did it. Maybe my first talent show, which I remember very vividly.
How old were you?
I had to be in fourth or fifth grade. It's about nine, maybe. No one had ever heard me sing before. Not even my mother. No one ever heard me sing. I was always cutting up in class.
Yeah.
And I remember like entering this talent show, and it was on costume day. I had a beat up robe on because I was going like as Moses or something. The robe was just beat up. And I sang this song called Eye Trouble. And I remember getting up on the stage, and at the school, it was pitch black. I remember like getting up on stage and I started singing, and I heard this from the audience. I was like, maybe this is what I want to do, because I had never sung, you know.
Yeah.
I was doing it at home, but not like out loud.
Yeah.
So maybe that was the moment. I was just always doing it. Really, I can't.
I understand. That's why, you know, when I ask a question, I get for a lot of artists, it kind of just happens, right?
Yeah,
it's just like, this is my track and this is my
like,
path
here you
to
go,
be on.
This is what you're going
to
do. And then I would see people like, you know, Michael and Prince, and I'd watch the Grammys. Like, I wanted to be in that world. I needed to be sitting in that audience watching Lionel Richie say outrageous on the American Music Awards. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, like, absolutely, man.
I had to be there.
You've played countless gigs since then. You go back to that talent show. Talk about how you felt in that moment playing that talent show compared to how you feel now when you're on stage.
Oh, I was scared. I was scared as hell. Like, I had the beat up robe on top of that. Did I mention the robe?
Yeah, you mentioned the robe, but like, we gotta make sure they know.
What made me pick that robe up and say, this is gonna be my Bible costume. Like, I just don't know. It was just beat up. I think it was my brother's robe. I don't know.
The story of the robe.
Yeah, but I was nervous. And I still get nervous depending on the situation. Part of me is very competitive. So if I feel like whoever's going on before me is killing it, I get nervous. Like, okay, no, there can't be any mistakes. There can't be anything. Mm-hmm. Totally make them remember us when we walk off.
And you've mentioned to me when we were kicking it that you almost have an alter ego on stage, correct? Like, you put on a persona on stage.
I have to, because people don't believe this, but I'm really kind of shy. Like, I've created this ego. He's a combination of Prince and Morris Day. So he has Morris Day's mouth.
Does he have a name?
Well, some people call him Uncle D. I don't know if that's right. But some people call him Uncle D.
I like it, man. Uncle D.
At some point in the show, you might hear Uncle D say, the last thing Uncle D needs is a wallflower. You need to get up and move something, shake something.
How do I get a nickname like that?
You just got to create an alter ego. You have to, you know.
I got to get to work on that one.
You know, Beyonce has Sasha Fierce, or whatever her name is.
Yeah. I never heard of that.
Yeah, everyone. Some people have an alter ego. Just being on stage, some people can turn it off and turn it on.
Was the Uncle D thing something someone said, you know, that helps you on stage? Or was it something that you yourself was like, look, I got
to. I would listen to artists do interviews and say they have to, like, create another persona just to kind of get through. Really, it just kind of happened one day.
Mm-hmm.
At one point, we were doing a lot of Prince material. So, like, channeling Prince and Morris Day, and I just like, you know what? I'm going to be Morris and Prince all in one person.
That's incredible, man.
You know, anyway,
it's a tall order.
You know, it's all about the swag and the confidence and the attitude.
Well, you got it, man. And I was talking about, you know, I got to see Darnell with the Sold Airs months ago at Oddity Bar here in Wilmington.
Great
and to
place.
This day, great, yeah, great place. You see some great music there. And to this day, I mean, me and my friends look back and we're like, I've never seen music in Wilmington like that before, just because of the ambiance of the bar and the energy that was brought that night. It was wild.
And that was a night where I was nervous. Yeah. There was a band that was on before us, and they were just killing.
They shredded.
For sure. Me and the guys and the girl were on the side of the stage watching them, and I'm like, nobody's going to be here. That was Darnell talking.
That was Darnell. Yeah.
Darnell was like, nobody's going to be here. But then that competitive thing got in me. I was like, listen, I want you to destroy this stage. You know,
you guys got after it that night,
and
man.
Uncle D got up there and was like,
Uncle D was out that night for sure, man, for sure. Well, Darnell, again, thank you for being here, man. And something that we want to talk about today, obviously, is Jesus and Jameson.
Mm-hmm.
That was put out earlier this year.
Mm-hmm.
We got, like, what, 6-7 months it's been out at this point?
Longer than that.
Longer than
we're
that.
We're coming up on the year anniversary soon.
Really? How about that, man?
Yeah.
So looking
we gotta
back.
We got to do something special.
Yeah, we got to get a special event. Get Uncle D out partying. But looking back, from the point where you put out the EP, looking back a year later, what do you think now, you know, when you look back at it after a year?
I just go, I can't believe I did it. There's so many things clashing to my mind, the studio sessions, thinking, is this really going to happen? Going to pick them up, that was really like a, seeing a CD in my hand.
Yeah.
People embracing it like they did. Because I didn't know, because my background initially as an artist was in gospel. So not knowing how certain people were going to embrace it, but like everyone embraced it. They loved the music. They was like, oh, that's you.
Oh,
you know what I mean?
I
was worried about that too. Yeah, like, you know, well, this is, no, that's you 100%, just really loving it. So it actually gave me a bit more confidence in my artistic abilities, just to kind of do more and reach for more. It definitely opened up the floodgates as a songwriter for me, because after that, it was like, I just want to keep writing.
Yeah, absolutely, you man. Know? I'm with the public there, dude. It was awesome. Like, Jesus and Jameson was a great piece of work, front to bottom. The transitions, too, which is something we're going to talk about, song to song.
I'm telling you, I can put a set together.
Yeah, like, it was crazy to listen to that, man. But let's dive into it right now, man. We're going to go through the entire EP. This is the very first song, Work, off Jesus and Jameson. Enjoy, guys.
Everybody wants to be on top, but they're too scared to fly. Everybody wants to be the boss, but they're too lazy to work.
I mean, it takes a lot. People see, whether you're a musical artist or an executive or something, they see people on top rocking, but they don't know the hours that they put in to do that. See the end results. We see the tours. We see that. That's such a lot of work to put in to be the best and to be on top of your game. There's no hours. It's not like 9 to 5. It's just whenever it's right. There's no sleep.
What's sleep, man? What is sleep?
You're alone. And I didn't know all this when I wrote the song, because I actually wrote the song in like 5 minutes.
Really?
Sitting in my music, you know, the first line was, everybody wants to go to heaven, but nobody wants to die. But that's true.
That's very true.
The death represents a sacrifice. You can't get anywhere without that sacrifice, that giving up something. You know, it could be a relationship that just can't handle, you know, the dream that you're trying to pursue. But you got to want that more than you want anything else.
And would you say the message was more to yourself or to everyone else?
You know what? At the time, I think it was just a universal message. But now it's definitely more, for me, I'm really taking that message to heart. You got to put in the work. If you want it, look at all these people that you look up to.
Mm-hmm.
They put in their time. They put in their work. They lost a lot of stuff, but they gained so much more than they lost.
Yeah.
One of the best lines for me is, everybody wants to be successful, but nobody wants to be alone. Sometimes it's going to be lonely.
Absolutely.
And you got to be willing to, like, you know what? I can't go out tonight. As much as I like to party, you can't go out tonight. You got to stay home and you got to do this, because the end result is, like, there's something else on the other side. Work requires looking at the bigger picture.
Yeah.
You got to put in work.
It's hard to argue with that. You know, that's something that I think a lot of people will get on board with. And what I loved in this song, obviously, the beginning was great, then 2 minutes hit, and we see why you're a Grammy nominated guitar player. And it comes in there, and I just love the fact that the emphasis you put on it, you know, as we hit towards the end of the very first song, like, you know, you start to see the picture of Darnell Miller and him as an artist. And when you decide to break things down with the guitar and, you know, pull the vocals off, is that something that's just natural for you? You know, right in the right point to put that in, or how do you go about that?
I think musically it's just like an instinct. I'm not a person that tends to write guitar solos, but I hear them in my head.
Yeah.
So even while we were cutting the song, I was like, I heard exactly how I wanted the guitars to go. I wanted to kind of sound a little bit like Lenny, a little bit like, you know, I have like proto, you know, like it should sound like this, because I wanted it to be a blues song, and I think it became more than a blues song.
So
I wanted to keep the guitar solo mostly bluesy, but then, you know, gotta throw a little like hair metal stuff in there. You know what I mean? You know,
well, and stuff. And you know, speaking about you and your history with the guitar, I mean, I could go down with everything that I know, the, all the accolades you got, and like I said, Grammy nominated artist. Can you talk about your history with playing the guitar and with some of these big bands like the GA and people like Eric Robertson?
I started playing when I was like 12 or 13. I took lessons from a wonderful guy named Christopher. Well, I started with Christopher Malinowski. He's the lead singer of the Collingwood. I took lessons from his father, who's passed on. But Chris was a big influence on me as just as a person, as a teacher. It's really weird to see him now that we're both like pretty decent guitar, because he's a genius.
You're like, you remember back
Yeah, you know, he's always like, you know, his dad was amazing to me. His dad pushed me constantly. But when I started wanting to like play for real, I started, you know, I was in church. I wanted to start rock bands, but no rock bands took me seriously because they thought that I probably couldn't play because I was black. But I was smoking every cat. I'm going to say it like this. I was smoking every young white cat at the time.
And that's how you shut them up, man. Yeah. That's how you shut them up.
I would walk in stores and I'd be like, yo, who are you? It's like that scene in Wayne's World, the May I Help You riff. Can I help you? I actually started like just for my friends, laying guitar on tracks. Can you come play guitar for this track? Can you play guitar for this track? It was a buddy of mine named Tony, who's like a big gospel producer now. He was the one that encouraged me to keep playing guitar. And he was like, you know what? You're weird. You know what? There's a group around here that's weird just like you. And they're called Ty and GA. And I was like, well, I've never seen them, you know, whatever. He was like, but you're weird like they're weird. They dress weird. They talk weird. Like this whole, you know, I was like, okay, well maybe one day I'll check them out. Yeah. So, you know, I'm still doing my thing. I happened to at the church I was at. Ty came in. He was like a guest choir director. It's all life is
wild, man.
So he, you know, he came in and I was cool with him. He was cool with me. And his keyboard player at the time, Dana Saray, was, I guess, starting to play at the church. And so me and Dana just started hanging out. And so that's when I really started doing sessions. Dana was taking me to Eric Roberson sessions. Yeah. I didn't even know. He would just say, it'd be like 1 o'clock in the morning, get up, you know.
Like, why?
We're in Jersey somewhere. We're in Jersey somewhere, you know, doing some Eric Roberson tracks or whatever. He would just have me on stuff. I lived with Dana almost, I think, for a good period of time. So when I actually saw Ty and GA, I was like, no, they're not weird. They're dope.
Yeah, yeah.
I've never seen a group like this. I'm talking like full-on Michael Jackson choreography. This is a gospel group. Michael Jackson choreography, a real, like, real production. Like, they meant business. Like, they would come out in straight jackets. Just, they meant business. They was about putting on a great show but still being effective, you know, spiritually. And he kept saying, you know, Ty's thinking about wanting to have you come and play for us. I was like, man, I don't want to do that. Let's just keep on cutting these records. And so then Ty started coming to some of the sessions with us. I mean, Vivian Green, whatever. I can't even remember. Yeah. And then one day, Dana was like, well, we got this gig. You should just come hang out with us. I was like, so I'm on the bus just to hang out. And I'm sitting in the bus, and everybody's like, where's such and such? The other guitar player, where's such and such? Where's such and such? Where's such and such? He ain't coming. And I look up, and I see Ty's brother with my guitar in his hand, like, well, I guess you're going to play today. And I was like, I don't know if this is the right thing. I don't know if this is the right thing to do. I don't know. I will never forget this. It was in Asbury Park, New Jersey. Now, mind you, they had just had their debut album out on Sony Records. And I knew the songs, but I didn't know them. I didn't know how to play those songs. We're in Asbury Park, New Jersey, opening for Fred Hammond. I will not forget this. And we're backstage, and I'm nervous because I don't know any of the songs. I don't know anything. And Ty's like, okay, you know this song? It's an A-flat. He's trying to call changes. He's like, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. It'll be okay. Man, we got up there. And I was like, oh, God. In my mind, I was freaking out. I was like, what the hell is going on? And then we just started. And all I can explain to you is it was like magic. First of all, everything was made up that night. So nothing was planned.
That's insane, man.
And it was just like magic. I remember, and he may not remember this, but when it was over, I was like so full of adrenaline because it really felt like magic. And I remember Ty's brother, Terry, who's like the most amazing bass player in the world. I mean, Jill Scott, Demi Lovato, I could go on. John Legend, I could go on. He looked at me, I looked at him, and all we could do was hug. He was like, I told you, I told you. And like from then on, it was just like, boom, we was off running. And as a band, in that band, we got to like really play for a lot of different people. You know, we got to play behind like Mary Mary, like on a TV show, which was really fun. You know, play behind people like Israel Houghton. It was just really fun. It was a really good time. I did my first TV appearances with Ty Tribbett. Amazing. So I got to see how it works on that level.
Yeah.
And how to be prepared and how not to be. I made a lot of mistakes. Went a lot of different places. More that I wish I had went to, because at the same time I was kind of like doing my own thing. And so some gigs I just didn't go to.
Yeah,
looking back, I wish I had just done all those gigs, but I was there for most of the time.
Yeah.
After a while, Ty started letting me open up. So, but it was fun. Like, it was fun to all the people that know that history. It kind of ended crazy for everyone as a whole. But all in all, it was fun. It was great. I had a blast, but I learned so much. I got to meet Stevie Wonder. I met a lot of my idols. I met the guys from Tony. Mine is Raphael Sadiq. That's going to come though. You know, I had people tell me, like, Paul Jackson loves your work. I got to meet some of my guitar idols. I mean, it was great.
And it was all because you just went to hang out one day.
I just went to hang out. And they set me up.
Insane.
And they set me up. So, like, all, like, the Eric Grove Roberson stuff, the Mary Mary stuff, all of that stuff came as a result of being in that camp, you know, because they were well respected. The band was really well respected in the industry. I mean, I could tell Ty and GA's story a little bit, but Cry Me a River, that's them.
Yeah.
That's them singing the background vocals. Rob Thomas, I Don't Wanna Be Lonely. That's Ty and GA. Commons album.
It's giving me goosebumps there.
You know,
man,
so like,
insane.
You know, being in that camp, you know, we got to experience a lot.
Yeah.
And do more than the average quote unquote gospel act. But it was fun. And after that, I took a break, decided to teach, get into like actually education and arts education. And but I kept on doing tracks for people, you know, then I started trying to produce a little bit and everything.
Yeah. And when
but now I'm getting back to playing.
And I want to talk about what point were you like, all right, I'm ready. I'm ready to put this EP out. I'm ready to start working on an EP. Like, was that a thing?
I'm still not ready. Like, what are you talking about? It's out and I'm not ready for it. You know what? I had been like, it's time for me to do something.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it starts with a thought for me. Like, Jesus and Jameson. Mm-hmm. I should write a song called that. You know what? That's going to be the EP.
Yeah.
Not knowing I'm going to do an EP, but it was just a thought.
Uh-huh.
You know, because, you know, artists, we have like ADD sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
So I'll get a thought and I'll be like, later for it, like 10 minutes later.
Mm-hmm.
But I actually stuck with this. I was like, I'm going to make a blues EP. Why for my first EP is it going to be because I wanted to be a blues EP.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad I did.
Yeah, for sure. Well, let's get back to the EP here, guys. This is the second song off the EP called Memphis from the Jesus and Jameson EP from Darnell Miller. You guys enjoy.
There's a hunger in my soul now. Really trying to find some food for my soul. Everything is gone crazy. And I'm struggling trying to grab.
It started with a thought. I'm sitting on the edge of my bed saying, you know what? I'm going to write a song called Memphis. And then I kind of toyed around with the chords for a while. It really just came. Like once I heard myself playing that initial riff, it just kind of came to me.
Not asking for too much. My soul needs revival, y'all. Why don't you take me to Memphis?
Cutting that song was probably the most fun in the studio.
Yeah.
You know,
there's a lot going on.
There's a lot going on. You know, so many things. There was a chance for me to get my boss on record.
Yeah.
My boss is a singer. She's a jazz singer.
I was going to ask you about that. Okay.
So it was a chance for me, you know, and I was scared because
yeah.
She's my boss. I was like, I have this session. Do you want to do it? She was like, for you, I'd be honored. So then it was like, so I was able to get her and Nikki Blue on that session and some other friends of mine that are like really amazing singers. That was fun. Cutting those vocals was fun. Because there's stuff that you don't hear. Like, we're making all kinds of noises. And
I try to imagine, like, when you hear those background vocals was like, because I feel like to a listener, like, oh, well, they came in knowing that they're going to hit.
No.
It's not like that.
Like, you know, I took a day before the session and kind of said, okay, this is how it's going to go. And actually, I had a friend of mine. He doesn't probably know this. He's a former member of Ty and GA, Aaron Camper. I was like, so what do you think about doing this part here? You know, he kind of, in a way, helped me arrange the vocals.
Uh-huh.
We arranged the vocals, went to the studio the next day and cut it. And then God bless Richie Rubini. He was like, let's try it this way then too. And it just took it to a whole another level. We had so much fun. And then I was like, I need organ on this thing.
Mm-hmm.
So me being that thinker, like, okay, it can't just be anyone. And it can't just be anyone from around here. How can I make this like real marketable? So I called a buddy of mine named Mike Hicks, who's an amazing musician. He lives in Nashville. And right now, he's playing for the Rascal Flatts.
Okay.
He's like their main musical director. And so I was
so he's
like,
doing well for himself.
Yeah, he's doing well. And I was like, Mike, man, I need a favor. Can you just please do this track for me? He's like, send it to me. He's literally cutting keys and organ in the hotel on tour. When he got home, he kind of fixed it up. So, you know, he was like, don't worry about it because you're going to be on Something of Mine. So
he's like, you're going to get me back on this soon.
I kept telling Richie, this is what I want it to sound like. This is what I want it to sound like. I mean, from the drums to the everything. That's the song that I didn't know it was going to turn out as good as it did.
Yeah.
Because I've never done anything like that.
And for clarification, tell everyone who Richie Rubini is.
Richie Rubini, former member of the Caulfields, producer, drummer, I mean, just all around good guy. Basically, he was the engineer for this project.
Mm-hmm.
But in some ways, he helped kind of guide along my production ear, like telling me you might want to think about this or try doing it this way. It was a great, great help. Almost like a mentor in a way, like in the studio.
And going back to the song, I mean, something I love that sticks out right away is that we got the vibe of the song. You're taking us to that place. space. And mm-hmm. By the way, Memphis, is there a special connection there?
You know what? There isn't. I just felt like there's so many songs written about Memphis. Uh-huh. But
it sounds good to sing. Like, yeah. It sounds good. The word Memphis is just like, it has that to
right.
it.
And so Memphis, to me, represented something else. My boss put it this way. It represents the other side of the mountain. It represents like inspiration. Because you notice, like in the song, I'm looking for inspiration. Mm-hmm. And so Memphis represents that inspiration. So then I start talking about, like, Martin Luther King was shot there. He's a big part of Memphis. Yeah. And Al Green and Dax Records and Otis Redding. You know uh-huh. what I mean? Those are all things that were inspiring to not only the country, but the world. So it represents a little something deeper.
That is deep, for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, the metaphor. Memphis is a metaphor.
Okay, I like that yeah. a lot. And like I said, you listen to the song, we're in Memphis, you take us there. And then mm-hmm. we get to that like three minute, 30 second mark where you start to say, when I get there.
Uh-huh.
What do you mean?
In the church, there's songs that talk about heaven. So mm-hmm. when I get there, my troubles will be over. Mm-hmm. When I get there, my worries will be gone. When I get there, my burdens will be lighter. Those are yeah. church lyrics. When I reach that point of inspiration, everything will be clear.
I loved it, man. Yeah. I loved it. Yeah. And then, you know, going towards the end of the song, we hit 5 minutes, and I'm like, man, that was a great song. I look up, and we still got like a minute 20 left to go. And I'm like, wait. And dude, I loved every second of the minute 20, man. You just played it out.
Listen,
like I was in the room, and you were playing a live performance. Like, on the EP, you played it out, dude.
Listen, we couldn't let that go in the studio. We couldn't let it go so much, we brought it back at the end of the EP. Like,
yeah.
I was like, yo.
Moment. Memphis, baby.
I was like, let's bring that back. We were doing hand claps. I mean, everything was fun. We wanted them to feel, we wanted you guys to feel what we were feeling. It feels like you're in an old wooden church and something's
though.
At, you know
it
what I mean?
It does though, that's
so that
crazy.
Whole, ooh, I was like, I want that to sound like we're putting a spell on them. Ooh, you know what I mean? You know.
I love it, man. I love it. And that's the thing, like, throughout the entire EP, obviously Come Home's a little more down tempo, but throughout mm-hmm. the entire EP, like, you feel the energy from the studio.
Yeah.
Which is just something that sticks out right away yeah. when you listen to it. And you're like, whoa. You know what I mean? That's cool.
That's
really, really, really cool. Really, really everything, we go from work to Memphis, and now we're Come Home. A little bit different than yeah. the first two tracks. Before we head into it, I mean, what's the mindset you want the listener to have when listening to this song?
You know what? The mindset is whatever you take from it, that's for you.
So this is Come Home off the Jesus and Jameson EP from Darnell Miller. Enjoy.
Like the solo thing, I had a band called Tilting Windmills. A lot of the songs I wrote were from the perspective of being very much in love. So towards the end of Tilting Windmills, that's when this song came. So this was part of that time. And I got my heart broken, and it was a situation where I was drunk, so I got liquored up. And I cried all the way home from New York, got home, and cried for a couple days, and then got myself together, and I just started writing this song. That's just a way of expressing how I felt.
So I'll pray for the strength to make it through.
And that was one of the first times really that, like, I started seeing songwriting as a way to just kind of like really put it out there. Because before, I was only writing mostly, I was in gospel. So I was just writing from, I was regurgitating stuff that we were taught. But now, like, especially with Tilting Windmills, it allowed me to explore, like, what am I feeling inside? And this was one of, like, those real moments. I was sad at the time I was writing the words. But then the musician side of me was like, oh, I want this to kind of feel like slow dancing in a burning room. You
yeah,
know what I mean?
Like John Mayer, yeah.
So that's why even the guitar solo was like, it is. Like, that's why I demoed the song. And there's a demo out there somewhere that I put out.
on the internet yeah. somewhere out there.
And it sounds almost identical to this version. And the guitar solo is exactly the same because I really love John Mayer. Yeah. It was really just my way musically of trying to, like, you know, pay homage to him and to create, like, a guitar solo that
yeah.
was
yeah.
similar. But yeah. the story is I got my heart broken really bad. And I think it was like a one-sided thing. And, you know, we cool now. It's just I never felt that mm-hmm. on that level. And I just had to write about it. There's like a whole album. So those, yeah. songs will, yeah. those songs will probably come out eventually. I felt like, and this is a song I never wanted to do again. Mm-hmm. But the thing about this song is that so many people, when they hear it, they are reminded of something else, which is why I said, whatever you take from it, that's for you. A dear friend of mine, she's an artist. She said, whenever she hears that song, she thinks about her mother who passed on. She's like, I know the song is about a relationship, but there's like words in there that make me think of my mother. And like, I want that to be a song that whatever you draw from that, that's totally for you. That's the way it's supposed to be. Yeah. And if it helps you heal, then that's good. If my pain expressed in art helps you move on, then that's what I'm here for.
And that's probably so cool to hear from someone else. Oh. That it has that kind of effect on them.
Mm-hmm.
That's it's wild. Crazy. Talk about writing a song where you open up like this. Mm-hmm. You know, it can't be the easiest thing to do is not only looking into yourself and opening up, but then putting it onto a platform for everyone to hear, you know?
Yeah, it's crazy. You know, wait till you hear the new stuff. Wait till you hear the new stuff.
You're gonna make me cry. I really am like,
oh my God, what are you saying? You know?
Yeah, man. And, you know, we talked about before we dove into the EP, the flow.
Mm-hmm.
I always love when you have a song that's a little bit different, and all the artists, you know, there's usually one song that's different than the most.
Yeah, yeah.
So you sandwiched it right in the middle of the EP. Was that a conscious thing, or was it just...
Everything was conscious. The order, I'm very, like, what's the word? Not meticulous, but I'm very, like, I'm very
well
calculated.
Yeah, well, calculated, yeah.
Yeah, the order was very planned out. I know I want to do this, and Mo' Memphis is going to be on the end.
Uh-huh.
That feels like a real album to me.
And why'd you want to put it in the middle?
I felt like it would kind of help set up the next song.
Which is?
I felt like those three, Memphis, Come Home, and then Jesus and Jameson. Like, well, I found redemption.
Yeah, I love it, man. So before we start diving into Jesus and Jameson, you know, first of all, Come Home, even though, like, I listened to it the first time, and I was like, well, it came across to me, man. It was my favorite song.
And
let me, for sure.
And here's a technical note.
Which is crazy.
Here's a technical note, Greg. So, like, I'm in the studio, first of all. Like, I'm cutting this vocal. And at the end, like, you hear me, like, oh, you know. And I'm like, listen, Richie, we have to do that last part over. Like, I like to hear it a certain way. Mm-hmm. And like, Richie's literally like, no, let's leave it that way. Because it sounds vulnerable and it sounds this.
It does,
so now I'm learning how to like do that. Like, at the first I was like, this sounds horrible. You know,
oh, man,
Richie's
I
like, no, it sounds vulnerable. Keep it.
All right, so we got Work, Memphis, Come Home. Setting us up for Jesus and Jameson, the self-titled, the EP itself. You know, there's a lot to talk about, but let's dive in. Let's listen to Jesus and Jameson off the Jesus and Jameson EP from Darnell Miller. You guys enjoy.
Pretend sometimes I'm a little bit Jesus, and other times a little Jameson.
I used to believe in fairy tales, but now I believe in me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I believe that we need Jesus and Jameson. Again, it's a metaphor for yin and yang.
Yeah.
We need balance. You can't be so far left and you can't be so far right. And guess what? We're living in the world of mistakes. And so we all fall short. And no one is perfect. And you don't have to be Superman. You don't have to claim that you know everything. You don't have to be Superman. You don't have to be Superwoman. We all fall short sometimes. Yeah. And then on a deeper level, it's like to church folk, get yourselves together. Like, you're not perfect.
That you're watching, no need to pretend. Sometimes I'm a little bit Jesus, and other times.
If I open the church door, I want to see homeless people. I want to see gay people. I want to see straight people. I want to see transgender people. I want to see everybody. We all fall short. We all make mistakes. The word sin is actually an archery term. It's not even like, oh, you're a sinner. The word sin is an archery term. Like archery, it just means to miss the mark. Sometimes when you're playing darts, you miss the mark.
When you write a song like this, after coming from your roots of gospel and Christian music, you talked about, were there doubts with a song like this? Like, I don't know if this kind of is what I come from, or this, there was no doubt.
Listen, there was no doubt.
Nah,
with this song,
I love
because
it.
At this
I
point,
it,
I was resolute in what I believed and what I do not believe anymore and what I do not buy into anymore. I was resolute. And so I knew like that, putting these two things together, Jesus and Jameson, first of all, they go hand in hand. How do we know Jesus doesn't want to shout at Jameson? Like, how do we know that? You know what I'm saying?
No
you
one
don't
does.
Know that. You're a human. You don't know that. I knew exactly what I was doing when I wrote this song. And I will continue to do more stuff like that because people need to be shaken into like thought.
I hope you do, man, because this was an awesome, awesome song. And something I love right in the beginning, say sometimes a little bit Jesus. And then when you say Jameson, the guitar kind of like brings you down to like the dark side yes. down there. You know what
it,
I mean?
It happens, you know. And on a musical note, a technical note, like, a lot of albums inspired me to write this album. So mm-hmm. I was very much into Chris Stapleton at this time.
Yo, I love Chris so Stapleton.
Even how it starts. I was like, imagine if that was Chris Stapleton doing that. Like,
really, I eat up all his stuff, man, yes. with his volume one, volume two. I was like,
Broken
you keep this going,
me,
man. Keep
Broken
this
Halos made me cry. I'm like,
dude, you know. I'm so glad that, because you can hear it. Like you said, and I read about it. I think it was on Out and About. You did an article with them. Where you listen to Chris Stapleton and it almost changed some of the lyrics or kind of the messages of your
message,
song.
The message, even like the harmonies. Like, I was like, yo, I love Chris. The two albums that I listened to the most during this three was Mavis Staples had an EP out produced by Sun Little.
Oh, I love Sun Little. Oh, Kimberly's Mine.
Oh, yeah. Sun Little, I listened to his EP and then I listened to Chris Stapleton. Those. Uh-huh. I mean, they inspired this EP so much.
That's so cool.
And the next EP, the next project is a lot of Sun Little inspiration.
Yeah.
Because I love Sun Little.
Can you talk about the next project a little bit, or is it under wraps?
Well, I mean, like, I'm still writing, and I don't know when I'm going to go in to record it. There is a working title, Take Only What You Need. Sometimes I'll perform some of the new stuff like I did at my EP release for Jesus and Jameson. I did actually a new song, which is called On That Day. It's very inspired by Sun Little. People think it's talking about me dying. There's a verse about me dying in there, but it's not talking about dying. It's just about being prepared for
everything.
For everything. Yeah. You know, I just want to be ready.
Yeah.
Whether it's me dying or me getting a big break, and it talks about my insecurities.
I love it, man. And it's crazy to think about, you know, it's part of the reason why, you know, I'm so enamored by music itself is because you never see it coming when an artist inspires you. It's not like you're going out and looking for an artist to inspire you. Yeah. It kind of just happens. Like Chris Stapleton came out of nowhere, man, to be honest.
Voice.
He
that
came
voice.
Out of nowhere, and you never do expect to be inspired. And I think nothing shows that more than music and the creative process of music.
And as an artist, you know, there's points where you think, man, music is over. There's nobody out there left. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden you hear a Chris Stapleton and you go, who's that?
Where did he come from?
Yeah, I love that. And that I love that. Mm-hmm. I love that. Sun Little was another one. I was like, who's this guy?
Yeah.
How old is he? You know? He looks like a 40-year-old and a 20-year-old. Like, he's amazing.
And I love asking an artist this, and it's a tough question to answer. Mm-hmm. What do you think about music right now? Whether you want to take that popular music or just, you know, the landscape of music right now.
There are some really good artists out there, but a couple of things is that it's the market's so flooded. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, like, what's being pushed mainstream, it's only like a handful of people. So it's you got five people, and then after that, like, everyone else is kind of, like, invisible. Mm-hmm. But there are some really great, great artists. I always try to figure out what the next thing musically might be, you know? And I'm usually always right. I always try to think ahead. Like, I think Bruno Mars was the tip of the iceberg, but he's mainstream. Beneath him, there's a whole movement of, like, future funk that's happening right now. And I think Tuxedo and, like, other bands, I think it's going to, like, that's going to be the next big thing, a mix of that mixed with the 90s. I think we're going to slowly get back to music. I know R&B is getting ready to like go through this really, really big revival with artists like Ella May. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a song I can play for my kids in school. I can play her, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But when I hear it, it reminds me of the stuff I grew up on. It creates that feeling. So I think that it's going back to that. I think hip hop, I don't know, I think there's great artists, but I don't know, like, in the mainstream, if it can be saved.
No, I agree with you. And it's hard for us, you know, me and you, we grew up on hip-hop. And you grew up, and the stuff you hear now on the mainstream is absolutely uncomparable.
Right.
Absolutely uncomparable.
Like, you know, I teach kids, and I'm trying to, like, find stuff for them to listen and analyze to. I can't. First of all, like, honestly, and this is not a dig at no, like, mumble rap or nothing, if I'm trying to get kids to listen and analyze what the song is about, you got to be able to understand what
yeah.
is being said and everything. Yeah. So I played KRS-One for them like a couple weeks ago, and they were like, what's this?
I love KRS-One.
They're like, I can understand what he's saying. Yeah. Yes, you can.
And I love his music, but then there's him when you listen to the man talk.
Profound.
You hear him, it's just
powerful.
Yeah. He's absolutely incredible. And I agree with you, man. And maybe you don't want to do it. I'll dig on mumble rap. It's just, I don't understand, man. I don't get it. Like they're all like, oh, but the beats.
The beats is crazy.
What? Like, I'll get a good beat and put a...
But
let's not get into it, though.
We definitely got to work on content. So it's okay to be, like, crazy and wild and nasty, and but, like, you got to at least have a couple songs the kids can get into.
Yeah, show some range. You know?
Yeah, you got to show range, man. Where are the new Missy Elliotts?
Seriously.
Where are the new, you know?
Seriously, man. And, like, I think we're lucky to have people in hip-hop that are big, like Kendrick Lamar.
Yeah.
Obviously, you know, he helps a lot of people like J. Cole. You know,
yes.
those people really, really help the scene. But they're still so popular, and yet this rap's still right there, man. It's something I don't get.
It needs to be, like, a rap revival.
Yeah.
So I think there's some great new MCs coming out. Everyone's talking about this girl, Tierra Whack, you know, who's crazy. Yeah, she's from Philly. Crazy. Can we elevate her up so she can set a standard so every female doesn't have to look at a Nicki Minaj or a Cardi B? Not dissing them, but females have range.
Absolutely.
There was a time where you could have Salt and Pepper being sexy, but you also had MC Light and then Latif. It was range.
Yeah.
So I think hip hop has lost its range. And there was also a point in rap where if I was a rapper and I rapped like you, that was a crime.
Yeah.
Now it's like you don't really know who's who.
No, not at all, man.
You know.
Not at all. I'll hear a song and I'm like, which one was he? Like,
right.
I don't know which one he was. And there's another person in there, I guess, you know?
So with the range definitely needs to come back.
Yeah.
You know?
We could talk forever.
We
really could. Let's rein it back in here, man. We've gone through a few songs off the Jesus and Jameson EP, Work, Memphis, Come Home, Jesus and Jameson. That leaves us with the lead single off Jesus and Jameson, the EP, which is Bastard.
Well, I used to be a bastard. Now I know where I belong.
This is a song that when I told certain friends the title, they laughed. It's a song about a little bit about me and a little bit about you. It's a story of redemption.
It's in my daddy's mansion. I should have been all along.
All I remember, this was during the Tilting Windmills days, and I just had this line, I used to be a bastard, but now I know where I belong. And that was a period in my life where a lot of stuff was happening. Ty and GA had kind of like all but disappeared, and it was just, that was for everyone.
Yeah.
It wasn't just me, it was just kind of like, oh, you coming to the show? What show? you're in North Carolina, right? No, I'm home. And I look up and, oh. You know, it's one of those, like, Prince and the Revolution moments. Like, oh, man. And then at the same time, you know, the church that I was at for years, the church I grew up in, I was playing guitar in, out of the blue, was like, we're going to let you go. All that happened at the same time. And then on top of that, my mother, out of the blue, became almost deathly ill. At the time, I was kind of going through all this by myself. And all I had was just me and my buddy Javi from Tilting Windmills. Mm-hmm. And, like, we would just go out and get plastered, like, you know, so I was going through a lot. The church that I grew up in, basically, that was my whole identity for years. All of a sudden, it's gone. Being with Ty, that became a part of my identity for some time. That was gone. And then my mother, who almost leaves, and mind you, she's in the operating table. I'm getting calls. I'm getting the call. Can you come here for Jill Scott? I can't. You know what I mean? It was like all of that was going on at the same time. And I just felt like, you know what? I'm just going to live my life and I'm going to do whatever the fuck I want to do.
Yeah.
It became a search for who am I now?
Mm-hmm.
That's what it became.
And so bastard in itself is a metaphor as well.
It's a metaphor. A lot of metaphors.
Yeah.
It's like I was fatherless in a way. Because you get your identity from your father, so they say.
Yeah.
When I started finding myself, that's when the rest of the song came. I've been walking through this desert with hell on my heels. I've been drinking muddy waters, trying to turn it into wine. All those things, those are like metaphors for stuff I went through. And then at the end, I say, it feels good to be home because I finally am finding who I am as a person. And if, you know, I'm getting older now, so if you don't like it, to hell with you. Like, it's whatever. But I know who I am. I used to be a bastard, but now I know where I belong. I know what tribe I belong to.
Yeah.
No pun intended.
Yeah. Little plug right there, man. I'll tell you.
I do want to shout out, because I want to shout out Pat Kane. We won a Homie Award for this song.
Mm-hmm.
who came in on the fly. I wanted Ben O'Neill, another amazing artist, plays for John Legend, to sing and play guitar. Ben was on tour, and I was like, who could I get? And Pat Kane just popped up, and he's such an amazing dude, you know what I mean? Talented. And he came in, and he just laced that track. He played some of the guitar, and he did the slide guitar, and then he did vocals on the bridge. He's just a great guy. We've never sung that song live, and I think we need to do that.
Yeah. I'll tell you, from like all the music that I listen to, a lot of music. I feel like I'm sick, so I listen so much music.
Me too.
But I hear this song, and, you know, I'm listening to it and just like, you know, kind of grooving out. And then I look up when this happens at a minute 40 in, and I'm like, did that just change the song or what's going on? And then you come right back into it. Smoothly, like you changed the entire identity of the song. Weird, because the song's about identity, like you talked about, but you're changing the identity mid-song and then pulling it right back in to the original song.
Got me thinking about
it. So it's exactly what you were talking about, how like...
So could that have been the moment of clarity?
Man.
What?
You helped me figure out my own song.
How does anybody do that?
What?
You helped me figure out my own song.
Guys can check out Jesus and Jameson everywhere music is available, Apple Music, Spotify, iTunes. Check it out. Thank you so much for being here, Darnell, and thank you guys for tuning in. You can check out all the links below in the description of Darnell, and we will be back soon with another artist spotlight. Thanks, guys.
I've been drinking muddy waters, trying to turn it into wine. I've been losing my religion, trying to give sight to the blind.